fires up the three. Bang! Bang! Jaylen Brown knocks down the three to tie the game. Timeout, Indiana.
And that, of course, the sounds from last night's game one of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Celtics and the Pacers. Jaylen Brown knocking down that three with just seconds left in the game to send it to overtime. Welcome in to Glass Half Full. I'm your host, Jordan Glass. Thanks so much for tuning in once again to this ESPN Pensacola podcast. Yeah, what a great game we had to start off the Eastern Conference Finals last night between the Pacers and the Celtics. Celtics end up coming out on top 133-128. And yeah, looking at that point total right there, we said it yesterday. You're going to have to score to win games in this series. Both of these teams got really good offenses, and they're going to be able to score and put up some points. And you saw it last night going into overtime, 133-128 the final. Jason Tatum, big for the Celtics, 36 points. Still a little inconsistent, kind of disappeared a little bit for the most part in the fourth quarter. I think if you're the Celtics, you're a Celtics fan, you'd like to see him play a little bit bigger of a role more consistently in all four quarters of the game. Who knows? Celtics might not have even needed overtime to win that game if he had played a little bit better in the fourth. Maybe they could have gotten it taken care of there in regulation. But he stepped up big time. When they needed him to make a play, he was there. So, you know, I think if you're looking at it from that standpoint, yes, the consistency has not been there the last couple of series inside the postseason, but when he's needed to make a play, he's definitely done that, and he did a great job of that last night, especially in overtime of that game. And Tyrese Halliburton for the Pacers on the other end, a double-double, 25 points, 10 assists for him. It's a deflating, it's a disappointing loss for the Indiana Pacers to battle back like they did and then to have a lead and give up a lead in the fourth quarter. Man, it's tough. I mean, they were down 12 points to start the game early, battled back, took control of the game, developed a lead of their own, and then lost it and ultimately lost the game in overtime. And now they've got to find a way to win four games after a very deflating and tough loss. I will say this, though. This is what I will say. If you've been paying attention to the NBA postseason, it doesn't matter how a team loses. Right? We've seen teams bounce back time and time again. So, yes, this was a deflating loss. Yes, this was terrible if you're a Pacers fan. But you should be aware of this, especially if you're a Pacers fan, because look at the series between the Knicks and the Pacers. How many times did we see the Knicks win a game by 30, only for the Pacers to turn around and win the next game by 30? Right? Teams so far in the NBA postseason, especially, have really bounced back after an embarrassing or a tough loss. They've really done a good job of doing that. I think this Indiana Pacers team has all the ability in the world to bounce back from this. They've got guys on their team that can really kind of help them move on from this, put it behind you, focus on game two, go out there, win game two, tie the series up at a game apiece, and you got a whole different series, right? Now, it is going to be a little tougher if Boston takes a 2-0 lead. That's why it's so crucial that you go out there and you put game one behind you and win game two, because you've got to tie the series up one game apiece, bring it back to an even playing field if you're Indiana. That's what you got to do. You want to play for an NBA championship, you got to bounce back from games like this, because this is what championship caliber teams do. They have a crappy day at the office, give up a lead, lose a game in overtime. They bounce back and they go out there and they win in dominating fashion in game two. We've seen the Pacers do it. We've seen other teams in the NBA postseason so far this year do it. There's no doubt in my mind that they can do it in this game. But still, a fantastic game last night to get the Eastern Conference Finals started off. We'll get the Western Conference Finals started off tonight. Tip off at 7:30 p.m. local time on ESPN. You can also hear it on ESPN Pensacola 99.1. So you can tune in right here. You're going to be out driving around. Maybe you know, you got some family in town. You guys going to be going somewhere. Have the game going on ESPN Pensacola 99.1 in the background in the car as you are driving around doing whatever you may be doing. We've got, I think both of these finals, these conference finals, are going to be great series. I really am looking forward to this one between Dallas and Minnesota. You got Minnesota, definitely, of course, obviously going to be looking for Anthony Edwards to be the anchor for them moving forward and giving them that chance to win the Western Conference title and move on to the NBA Finals. But you've also got to have guys like Karl-Anthony Towns step up. And I'm not saying that to to, you know, downplay Karl Anthony Towns or anything he's done. He's played well. He's also kind of had some injuries. He's been banged up a little bit. But he's got to be a little bit more consistent. Just how we talk about Jason Tatum being more consistent for the Celtics, Karl Anthony Towns has got to be more consistent for the Timberwolves, especially in this Western Conference series. So definitely going to be looking for him to step up and be that big number two. And one of the reasons that Karl Anthony Towns needs to be more consistent and looking to be that main guy outside of Anthony Edwards is because of what I think Dallas needs to do to win this series, and that's to take a page out of Denver's book and what we saw Denver do a few times. They didn't do it every time they played, but they did it a few times, and when they did it, it worked, and that was they were suffocating on Anthony Edwards, right? They suffocated him. They pressed him. They blitzed him. They put anything and everything they could put on him. They did it, and it worked for Denver in that series, in the semifinals. It worked for them. The games that they were able to successfully press Anthony Edwards were the games in that series that they were victorious in. So if I'm the Dallas Mavericks, I'm looking at that, and if I'm Jason Kidd, the head coach of the Mavs, I'm saying, yeah, you know what? That's exactly what we need to do. We need to push. We need to press. We need to make Anthony Edwards as uncomfortable as possible, because when he's uncomfortable, that throws that whole team's rhythm off. Because at times there is nobody to step up and be that next guy, which is, again, why it's so crucial for Karl Anthony Towns to be that guy in this series. Because you better believe Dallas is going to put the pressure on Anthony Edwards. They're going to be coming at him with everything they can bring. So somebody for the Minnesota Timberwolves have got to step up if they want a chance at winning this series. I tend to personally like Dallas in this series. I think they are a little bit deeper and better of a team. You've got Kyrie, you've got Luka. I think those two guys are going to be, you know, the driving force, that 1-2 punch for the Mavs in this series, much as they've been throughout the entire season. So I do tend to lean a little bit more towards Dallas in this series if I'm going to make a pick. But I wouldn't be surprised if Minnesota wins the Western Conference Finals. I wouldn't be surprised one bit. They've got talent. They've got the drive. They've got the determination. They've got the coaching. They've got everything they need. It's just going to be if when Dallas shuts down Anthony Edwards, will there be somebody to step up for the Timberwolves? If they have somebody step up, whether it's Karl Anthony Towns or somebody else on that roster, if somebody steps up or a couple of guys step up, they should be just fine and have a great opportunity to win this. But again, I lean more towards Dallas in this series. And the NHL side of things for the Stanley Cup playoffs, you talk about a good series we got going tonight. How about the Florida Panthers and New York Rangers playing for the Eastern Conference title? That is going to be lots of fun. Two great goalies in this. Igor, you know, if you're a fan of Young Frankenstein, Igor, Frodrick, all that good stuff. Bobrovsky, oh, man, the goalies in this game are fantastic. In this series, really, are fantastic. Two of the more fun goalies to watch, especially Bobrovsky, man. Some of the saves he had, especially in that Tampa series, just incredible to watch. So definitely going to be keeping an eye on that. Not really call it a matchup, right? Because these guys aren't like necessarily going directly against each other in a matchup. But still, they're going to be on the ice together, and that's definitely a group of guys, two guys that you want to keep an eye on in this series. Both teams, very similar so far through the postseason, averaging about 3.5 goals per game. So, you know, their average is right there around the same for each other. The one thing I think could determine this game, or this series, really, is power play. Who can have more success on the power play? And right now, that's the Rangers. The Rangers have been doing a great job of with the power play so far in the postseason, and really, honestly, truthfully, all through the regular season. The Rangers have done a great job with the power play. The Panthers have struggled at times, especially in that series against the Lightning. They definitely they were able to find some goals, but they did tend to struggle a little bit on a power play. So I think that if the Rangers can just take advantage of the power play opportunities when they arise, I think they've got a legitimately good chance of taking care of business tonight and really, honestly, and truthfully in this series. It's definitely going to be a fun one. It was a little more lopsided in the regular season towards a team that you would maybe not think. The Panthers actually got the best of the Rangers in the regular season. So we'll see what happens. Of course, once we hit the postseason, anything that happened in the regular season, you throw that out the window. It doesn't really matter anymore. But that's definitely looking forward to that. Going to be a fun one tonight. And again, that gets started later on this evening. The other side of the NHL playoffs, I think, unfortunately, those guys are just playing to lose to the winner of this series. I think you're looking at the Rangers, you're looking at the Panthers. I think one of these two teams that are getting started in the Eastern Conference Finals tonight, that's going to be who lifts the cup up when we're done with the Stanley Cup playoffs. And they're skating around the rink, whether that's their home rink or the visitor's rink, they're going to be lifting that cup up. I think these two teams are just too good, and the rest of the teams that are involved and left in the playoffs, I don't see them having enough to be even close to the Florida Panthers or New York Rangers. Little NFL right now, Justin Fields talked a little after an OTA practice, kind of the last little bit of his time in Chicago and kind of how he feels now being in Pittsburgh and his vision for being in Pittsburgh. And I thought it was interesting. He said, I'm not dumb. I can read body language on people, right? People walk into a room or I walk into a room. You can kind of tell how people, you can tell how they react. He knew what was happening. He's like, I knew it was coming. You know, it wasn't a surprise that I was not going to be in Chicago anymore, that my time with the Bears was winding down. I could read people's body language. He's like, it was just a matter of where was I going to go? Now that, wasn't going to be sticking around in Chicago. And he even credited the Chicago front office for being very transparent with him. And when it came time to have that conversation, they were very transparent, talked to him about it, and even told him, said, look, we want to send you to a place that's going to be good for you, right? We don't want to just ship you away. We want to put you in a situation that's going to be best for you. And he commended them for that. And he feels like they did that by opening the door and letting him go to Pittsburgh. He liked the idea of going to Pittsburgh and playing for the Steelers. He thought that was a great opportunity for him there in that city and with that team. And he talked about how he thought that door was closed, right? When they brought in Russell Wilson, still had Kenny Pickett on the roster. He's like, well, they've got those two guys, probably not going to be looking to bring me in. But all of a sudden, the news came out, and he said that his agent kind of had warned him that it could possibly happen. But then it did officially happen that Kenny Pickett got traded away from the Steelers. So once that happened with Kenny Pickett, I think Justin Fields kind of knew that Pittsburgh was where he was going to end up, and says that it's been great so far. He's definitely happy and satisfied there. And I think the thing that about this that I really liked hearing him say was that when he looks at the landscape of the quarterback room right now with Russell Wilson, he doesn't see himself as a season-long backup to Russell Wilson. No, instead, he's learning the plays. He's out there pushing Russell Wilson in OTAs. He plans on pushing him in practice all the way through the season. And he's hit it himself in the interview. He's like, I don't see myself being a guy that's standing on the sideline backing him up the entire season. I am fighting for that starting position. So it's nice to hear that even though everything that happened at Chicago with Justin Fields and the way it went down and the way he struggled and just kind of not necessarily gaining the momentum that a lot of people thought he might with the Bears, it's nice to hear that he still has that fire, that he still has that competitive edge and that passion to go, you know what? Yes, they've got Russell Wilson, but I'm going out and I'm working my butt off each and every day to make sure that I have an opportunity to potentially start a game if that comes up. And look, with what we've seen from Russell Wilson over the last few years, it could very well come up. It could very well be a legitimate situation where halfway through the season, if Russell Wilson is not performing well, we see Justin Fields come into this game. Halfway through the season, halfway through the regular season, Russell Wilson not really doing it for the Steelers in that offense, so we can possibly see them make that switch over to Justin Fields. Or, let's not pretend Russell Wilson he's been in the league for a little bit of time now, right? An injury to him might take him a little bit longer to recover from. opens up the door for Justin Fields. There's plenty of opportunity. So I love the fact that Justin Fields is in this situation going, yeah, okay, they've got Russell Wilson, but I still consider myself to be the starting quarterback, and I'm practicing and I'm prepping and I'm maintaining myself to be the starting quarterback because that's my goals, that's my aspirations here in Pittsburgh. I love it. I love it. For a kid who had so much negativity surrounding him the last couple of years, he has not lost that fire, that passion, that energy that he had when he was at Ohio State and coming into the NFL. So kudos to Justin Fields. We'll see if it pays off for him. Who knows? Maybe it will. I think there might be a legitimate shot at seeing him halfway through the season taking snaps as a starting quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles, for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Another quarterback in the NFL that will be taking snaps as a starter day one and doesn't really have any kind of worry about anybody taking that position from him is Aaron Rodgers. He also talked at OTAs kind of about the do-or-die type season not only he has for his career, but really the Jets have in general as well. And he's not shying away from it. I mean, he came out yesterday and he told the media, he said, look, if we don't do well this year, if I don't do what I know I'm capable of doing, we're all probably going to be out of here, right? They're going to release me, go find somebody new. They probably bring in a new head coach, bring in new players, completely rehaul and restart this organization all over again. He understands that this is a crucial year for not just him as a 40-year-old veteran quarterback in the NFL, but also for the New York Jets and the people on that coaching staff and the people on that roster. And even more so, he's like, you know what? I kind of like the pressure, right? Like, if you're not playing this for that pressure, if you're not playing this for that type of mentality, what are you doing in the NFL? If you can't handle the heat, why are you in the kitchen? So Aaron Rodgers, definitely looking forward to this season. And look, I said it, he's 40. He's coming off of an injury that is, even with the advances we have in today's sports medicine, still hard to come back from a torn Achilles. That is just tough to do, especially at the age of 40. I think he's got, obviously he's Aaron Rodgers. He's got the arm strength. He's got the ability. If he can stay healthy, and like he said, if he can play up to the capability that he knows he has, I think the sky's the limit for the Jets. I saw something the other day that was like, oh, the Jets are going to win 14 games. So maybe not the sky's not the limit, because I don't think they're going to win 14 games. They're in a tough division. They've got to play against Miami, who just added Odell Beckham Jr. They've added a couple of other more speedy players in the draft. They are listed and labeled as the fastest team in the NFL. And on paper, yes, 110%, they are the fastest team in the NFL, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So we'll see what happens with Miami there, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Defensively, they got a new defensive coordinator. But also, the Jets have to go up against Buffalo. Now, Buffalo does have a lot of young talent coming in, but I think that young talent will only rejuvenate and re-energize a guy like Josh Allen, and I think Buffalo is going to have a heck of a season too. So it's going to be tough for the Jets to top both Miami and Buffalo. I think both of those teams finish ahead of them. But if we're talking about a healthy Aaron Rodgers-led team for the New York Jets, if we get to beginning of December and the Jets are a wild card team getting into the postseason, I would not be surprised one bit. Not one bit. I legitimately think that there are three playoff caliber teams in the AFC East right now. I think you have probably the division winner in either Buffalo or Miami. Then let's say Buffalo wins the division again for another year. Then you'll have I full-heartedly believe Miami and the Jets would be the wild card teams. I really do. So I think the AFC East is going to be tough this year. So I don't know if I see the Jets winning 14 games, but I think they can win enough games. I think they can win 11 games. I think they could win 12 games and be a pretty good football team that's going to beat some teams in the regular season that they probably weren't expected to beat heading into the preseason, right? So I think with Aaron Rodgers, again, if he can stay healthy, if he can play to the capability that he knows he still can play at, I think they're going to be just fine there in New York. I mean, you look at what they've added offensively through the offseason. He needed to get better on the offensive line, so they bring in guard John Simpson. They bring in 8-time Pro Bowler Tyron Smith And then, of course, they need a wide receiver, too. You got Garrett Wilson, but you need that other guy, right? We talk about how with Miami, to bring Miami back into this, staying in the same division, Miami had Jalen, they had Tyreek, but if one was hurt and out, all he had to do was double team whoever was left in there. So if Jalen was out with an ankle injury or something like that, double team Tyreek, take him out of the picture. That hurts the flow and the rhythm of the Miami Dolphin offense, right? And it was the same for the Jets with Garrett Wilson. You know, if they took Garrett Wilson out of the picture, then it was very much a rhythm killer for the Jets. So they needed to go out and find a receiver, too, that could help them. They bring in Mike Williams, and I think that's a great pickup there from the Chargers. So definitely looking forward to seeing what this offense can do for the Jets with a full season of a healthy Aaron Rodgers. You know, we got what? A play last year, like one regular season play, and then he tore his Achilles. So hopefully we can get a little bit more out of him heading into 2024. Some good news in the NFL. Tank Dell, the wide receiver for the Houston Texans, is actually back with the team and practicing during OTAs less than a month after being shot. He was shot down in Sanford, Florida, which is, if you're not familiar with the area, that is probably about, 30 minutes to an hour north of Orlando. He was down there with some family and friends, and somebody opened fire into the group, and he took a couple of shots there. None of the injuries that he sustained from it were life-threatening. So that's always definitely a plus to hear. But, it's good to hear that he was back out there in OTAs with the Houston Texans. So good for him. Rashee Rice, we talked a little bit about him on yesterday's show. And we even talked about this situation with the alleged assault in the Dallas nightclub. We talked about how we didn't really know the scene of what happened and what was said or what was done to lead up to Rashee Rice allegedly punching this gentleman inside the nightclub, I believe it actually was outside the nightclub. But either way, not quite sure what led up to that. Well, the guy that he allegedly punched has now contacted police and has decided to not press charges. There will be no charges brought to Rashee Rice for that. So that looks like that situation is settled. And I think if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, that's at least one sigh of relief. Now, he is still facing the multiple other charges for the car accident he got into in Texas, which I believe it was six counts it was a lot of things. I think it was like six or seven counts, actually, of different total things that he's facing as far as charges go. So we'll see what happens with that situation. But as far as the nightclub situation, looks like that is resolved. No charges going to be pressed in that situation. This broke yesterday after the episode was released, and I thought it was very, very interesting. Jaden Rashada, who is a quarterback at college football, was originally committed to Miami, decommitted from Miami, committed to Florida, had some NIL deal issues, so decommitted from Florida, or was released from his commitment from Florida, went on to play for Arizona State, which was his dad's alma mater, and has now transferred to Georgia after a year at Arizona State. He is suing the University of Florida and Billy Napier and a technology businessman named Hugh Hathcock for that busted up NIL deal where he was supposed to have gotten $14 million to play at the University of Florida. Something happened. The NIL deal ended up being taken back, and he asked to be released from his commitment to the University of Florida because of that. And that's how he ended up at Arizona State. So the lawsuit was filed Tuesday, and as a matter of fact, it was filed right here in Pensacola at the U.S. District Court. It alleges that Billy Napier and booster and automotive technology businessman Hugh Hathcock, with fraudulent misrepresentation and indictment, aiding and abetting fraud, civil conspiracy to commit fraud, negligence, misrepresentation, torturous interference with a business relationship or contract, aiding and abetting torturous interference and vicarious liability. And the complaint seeks a jury trial and damages of at least $10 million. So $4 million short from what he would have gotten if he would have actually followed through with this NIL deal and played with the University of Florida. My whole thing with this is, I'm sure there are situations across this country right now at the college level, especially with the NIL deals, there's situations like this that are happening every day. As a matter of fact, the NCAA did an investigation into Florida for the way that they handled this, but March of this year, NCAA decided to halt all those investigations into booster-backed collectives or other third parties that were making the NIL deals for the university. And that phrasing right there, the booster-led collectives that were making the NIL deals for the university. This is kind of why I have a problem. Look, if you want to, I don't know who this Hugh Hathcock guy is, all right, the businessman that supposedly was part of the collective or in charge of the collective that Florida was using at the time, which I believe was called like the Gator Collective or something along those lines. They have Florida Victorious now, which is the collective they use, and they haven't had any issues with Florida Victorious. We'll talk more about the collective in just a second. But I think to go after the university, to go after Billy Napier, I think that's a little misguided on this, because it wasn't Billy Napier and the University of Florida that pulled the NIL deal back. It was this businessman. It was the collective that was happening at the time that pulled this deal back. If you want to sue somebody, fine. Sue that. Sue them. Sue that company. Sue the collective. But to bring the University of Florida, to bring Billy Napier into it, I'm not necessarily sure that is the right path to go down, simply because from what I read about the way things happened between Florida and Jaden Rashada is that Billy Napier and Jaden Rashada didn't even really kind of verbally do an agreement on this. It was between Jaden Rashada and the collective. At least that's the way I kind of understand the way that things went down there at the University of Florida with this deal, was that it was the collective and Jaden Rashada that verbally made this agreement. And it was the collective that pulled it back. And oh, by the way, the university not only completely cut ties with the collective, but disbanded the collective shortly after this happened. So the University of Florida and Billy Napier were not happy with this collective when this went down. They were not happy about it either. They disassociated themselves from this collective. They disbanded the collection. They no longer are a part of that. Like I said, now they use Florida Victorious as their new collective. And to my knowledge, have not had any issues. And I mean, they just took on the number one wide receiver in the class, the number one DB, the number one offensive lineman, just got all of them out of the portal. So it doesn't seem like there's any issues with NIL down there at the University of Florida. DJ Lagway doesn't seem to have an issue. So it seems like Florida Victorious is actually not only making their promises, but keeping them up too. Which brings me into my next point. For Jaden Rashada, I get it. You probably were ticked off that this deal fell through. But you didn't lose money from it. You didn't give money to the collective in order to get money back. There really wasn't anything there that you lost outside of the opportunity to play for the University of Florida. And even still, like I said, the University of Florida was not happy when this fell apart. So the University of Florida and Billy Napier have the same sentiment to this situation that you do. But again, it didn't cost him anything to file a lawsuit for $10 million. Just seems a little bit ridiculous to me. It sucks. It happened. Move on from it. Go play ball somewhere else where the collective is actually going to get you your deal. And now that he's transferred to the University of Georgia, he is going to be able to do that. And of course, now that he's transferred to the University of Georgia, lots of Florida fans are going, how much is Kirby Smart behind this? How much of this was orchestrated? Because he didn't bother to have a lawsuit at any of the time. The whole, year and a half he was actually enrolled and playing football at Arizona State, didn't really bother to have an issue of bringing up a lawsuit then. Why now, a month or so after he's transferred to the University of Georgia, is there all of a sudden a lawsuit coming down on, Georgia's biggest rival inside the SEC and the Florida Gators? And why is it being more directed towards the university and head coach Billy Napier? There are a lot of Florida fans that are going, is there something we should, talk about here. Is Kirby Smart behind it? And look, I don't know if he is or not. He might be. I don't know. But my whole thing with this is this was a situation to where there was a collective that I think made a promise they could not keep. They said, we're going to pay you this amount of money. And then, uh-oh, we can't do that. We've got to pull that offer back. And rightfully so, Jaden Rashada got ticked off by this and said, well, if you aren't going to give me that deal, then I'm going to go play somewhere else. Release me from my commitment. And he did that. He went to Arizona State. The University of Florida, Billy Napier, were ticked off by this as well. So they went to that collective and said, you're done. You're no longer working with the University of Florida. And they disband that collective altogether. This just seemed like it was a situation where it was just not necessarily wrong place, wrong time, but this was a collective that was poorly managed by people who, despite being businessmen or businesswomen, did not really know what they were doing as far as the collective goes for NIL. So I understand Jaden Rashada might be upset, but at the same time, I would say this. There are going to be throughout your life promises that are made to you that aren't followed through with. There are going to be people that say stuff to you with no intention of holding that comment or that statement up. There are going to be people who offer deals to you who have no intention of holding those deals or those bargains up. That's life. You can't sue somebody just because maybe they promised you something and couldn't follow through with it or didn't follow through with it. That's going to happen in life. You learn from it, you move on from it, and you live to fight another day. I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of this lawsuit and it happening, just because I think it's going to set a precedent now to where if a player doesn't get the amount that they think they deserve from a university, they're going to try to sue the university or sue the coach or sue the collective. NIL is so muddy, and it's still not a clear picture right now. Even though we've had it for a few years, it's been around some time now, it is still not a cut and dry black and white issue. Like, it's got a gray area to it. So I'm not a fan of the lawsuit of saying, well, I didn't get the deal I was promised at Florida, so I'm going to sue you for $10 million. I mean, what happens if he gets into the NFL and let's say he's drafted by the Tennessee Titans and he plays out his first rookie contract in the league and he's expected to be offered a deal by the Tennessee Titans? The Titans say they're going to offer him a deal, but then ultimately decide to go a different direction and he's got to become a free agent. Is he going to sue the Tennessee Titans? This is going to set a precedent now, I think, to where there's going to be a lot of players who, if they don't necessarily get the NIL deal they feel like they are offered, or the deal that they feel like they're deserving of, that they are going to start suing the school. And then you're also going to have these lower-level players who, lower level is kind of a harsh way to phrase it, but you know what I'm talking about. These players who necessarily aren't well known, they're not a quarterback, they're not a running back, they're not a receiver, maybe they're a second string offensive lineman, their NIL deal is not necessarily as lucrative as others. Suddenly they're going to look around and go, well, why am I not getting that much? Lawsuit. We got to be careful with where we go with things like this in NIL, because again, it's just still a muddy situation, and it's not a clear cut yes or no type thing with the NCAA. And I think that's truly why the NCAA halted the investigations into these booster-backed collectives, because there's no way for the NCAA to truly police these booster-backed collectives, because 9 times out of 10, they're not associated with the university. They're third parties. So the NCAA can't really police them like they really should be able to. I think until we have a situation where collectives are part of the athletic department at a university, the NCAA can't really say or do anything. So I think if it's not a part of the university, if the NCAA can't say or do anything, the university itself and anybody associated with the university, whether that's an athletic director or a head football coach, should not have a lawsuit levied against them for something that a third party did. Remember, it was a third party that offered this NIL deal to Rashada. It was that third party collective that pulled the deal back off the table, opening up the door for him to ask for his release from his commitment to Florida and going to Arizona State. You want to sue somebody? Fine. Sue the collective. Sue the businessman that was in charge of the collective that you talked to. Don't go after the university. Don't go after its head coach. They were just as upset and just as bothered by this outcome as this as you were. And that's where I'm going to leave that. Close out today, a nice little funny story. Bryce Harper, Philadelphia Phillies, he got a fan in touch with him. He was a young fan, a teenager, and he said, "Hey, man, prom's right around the corner. I have this idea. I don't know if you'd be available for it, if you'd be willing to do it or not. But I got this girl. We're both big Philly fans. I wanted to ask her to be my date for prom. I thought it'd be cool if maybe you came over to her house with me. We knocked on the door, and you actually asked her for me." And Bryce Harper, if you don't know anything about Bryce Harper, Bryce Harper is a cool dude, right? Like, he is one of the most genuine players in the MLB. So, of course, Bryce Harper goes, "Yeah, absolutely. I'll be happy to help you do that." So they go over to this girl's house. The teenage boy, all nervous, knocks on the door. Bryce Harper standing next to him. The girl comes outside. He goes, "Hey, I'm Bryce. This is my friend." They're teenagers, so I'm not saying their name. But he goes, "This is my friend. He wanted to ask you to prom. So would you go with him?" The girl immediately says yes, and then hugs Bryce Harper and leaves the guy that she's going to prom with just hanging in the cold. So I just thought it was so funny that, you know, the guy's standing there, the teenager standing there, he's waiting for a hug from what's going to be his prom date. He's all happy and excited that this girl that he wants to take to prom just said yes, and she's going to be his date. And he's waiting for a hug, and she just goes right past him to Bryce Harper. It's a great video. Go check it out if you can. Hey, thanks so much for tuning in. That is going to do it for today's show. This has been Glass Half Full with me, Jordan Glass, an ESPN Pensacola podcast. Have a great Wednesday. I'll talk to you tomorrow.